Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Kathy Santos, and this is our Women Veterans Speak Hour, discussing the military, current events as it relates to women in the military. And I'm sure that some of our listening audience would agree that we cannot restrict to a total Women Veterans platform. So we're just going to be talking about veterans issues in general, but today we're going to focus our topic of discussion on the chaplaincy and the role of the chaplaincy in the military and in the lives of transitioning military and veterans. So we would like to first thank all of our participants in our Thursday's Women Veterans Speak event at the Philadelphia VA, which is quite a success. We had the opportunity to honor our Chaplain Bracy, the chief being Samuel Adamson, who permitted this event to go forward, and the other chaplains who participated in this support of celebrating the role of the chaplain. And also, we honored Edith Long, who was the patient advocate, and we surprised them with that occasion, and we were happy that they responded quite well to our spotlighting them in their roles as chaplain as it relates to us and our understanding and belief that it is important to our spiritual healing when we transition from the military. So we were great for all of the participants, Justice Royal, who delivered a wonderful selection, and Mr. Vernon Neal of Potman Ministries, who gave a wonderful poem, and all of the participants, Juanita Bennett, who was our pianist. We would like to thank her for her generous time in sharing a midday event with us. We know that she's very busy. And to all of the other participants and attendees, we're just grateful for you to take the time out to come and help us to, first of all, identify with that most important role of the chaplain and support us in our event. I would like to first start out our program today with a little bit about the history. And I found a very interesting article dated May 11, 1955 from the Tuscaloosa News. And it was an online article that I'd just like to read you the excerpt from this particular article of May 11th, 1955, which is just over many, many years ago, but 57 years, whatever the time. But the article reads, "Chaplains Observe Their Bicentennial." It's from the Washington Post, and a Washington-based writer, United Press, I believe, that UP is for. "The Army and National Guard chaplains throughout the world celebrated the bicentennial of the establishment of military chaplains in America, in American Armed Forces this year. 200 years ago, in 1755, town clergymen joined the troops taking part in the French and Indian War, not to fight, but to minister to the spiritual wants of their fellows." And just to go back a little bit further on this issue, 1755, chaplains throughout the world celebrated the bicentennial. chaplains throughout the world. So we're talking about an international connection of chaplains who were celebrating in 1755. From the time of this particular article in 1955, it's 20 years ago, 1755, town clergymen joined the troops taking part in the French and Indian War, not to fight, but to support their spiritual needs. Now, they had no internet. There were no phones, but they joined together in support of a much-needed activity towards or for the military. And where have we come over the years? There have been many legislation passed, and as recent as 2003, we have had Senator Charles Schumer of New York to revisit the issue and the role of a chaplain in our United States Army. And we understand that maybe there needs to be some further discussion about that role of the chaplain in our military. But more important, how that role needs to impact our transitioning and civilian military, meaning the veteran, or even one who may not have done veteran status, which may be anyone who have enlisted, been commissioned, regardless of their discharge, the whole distinction of military for this, for the purpose of this discussion, will be anyone who has enlisted in the military, regardless of their discharge status. We are going to suggest that that role of the chaplain or spiritual leader is important, and we are going to try to describe a narrative on how it can impact when it's not there, but also, more importantly, when it is there, the role of the chaplain in the life of a military person. That is an individual who has enlisted or been commissioned in our armed forces, have gone through some level of training, and they have been disconnected from that entity in some way. And despite the fact that they may not qualify as a veteran per se in our legislative or legal understanding of veteran, but for the purpose of this conversation, because the need for the spiritual role could still be very vital for their transition and for their recovery back into the mainstream society. I would like to talk about Barry Black. In June of 2003, Rear Admiral Barry C. Black was appointed the 62nd chaplain to the United States Senate. His nomination by then-President Bill Clinton and the Secretary of the Navy, during Black's tenure as Chief Navy Chaplain, was acknowledgement of a long and illustrious military career and indeed a special relationship with God. The appointment makes Black the first military chaplain, the first Seventh-day Adventist, and the first African-American to fill this seat. Now, I think that's important because some of the discussion in a recent forum on chaplains, they talk about the many distinctions in the role of the chaplain, whether they were Muslim or whatever their religious affiliation is. But what's important for realizing, and I think I'm going to read this a little bit from a comment of one of our Navy chaplains, and, excuse me, not Navy chaplain, she is a Army chaplain, Lieutenant Colonel Lisa Tice, a reformed chaplain who served in the Personnel, Budget, and Readiness Division of the Air Force, Office of the Chief of Chaplains, Lieutenant Colonel, please forgive me, it's Air Force and not Army, said that Tier 1, the first phase of military training, is gearing towards chaplains, and we're referring this to the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. And she's referring to the counseling of gays. And she believed that because there were so many different religious affiliations represented in the military, that their role had to be one, if I could find her direct quote, they talked about the Islamic faith and some of the other interesting factors that impact our society as Americans with regards to how we now view post-911 the Islamic community. So we would like to address just a little bit about some of the things that the military has done to create platforms for these discussions. And one, I think, that ignited some of the discussion was the Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And there was the Department of Defense had a military training, and some of the comments from some of the chaplains represented there, Navy, Air Force, Army, and so forth, they talked about what their position would be on counseling gays, which had already begun. And this comment from Lieutenant Colonel Tice, or Lisa Tice, a reformed chaplain, she said she did not see it as a big deal. A Navy chaplain, Captain John Lee, said that the training needed to be face-to-face seminars focused on the situations and scenarios. which I would think he's suggesting that it's an individual basis. But the training is the impetus, I believe, that will allow chaplains to get a very important insight into the lives of not only Donetsk and Donbass, but when you talk about the military and the issues aside from those type issues, I consider that one of individual and personal. But when you're talking about in the military and then the other compounded issues, there has to be some additional training in to the chaplaincy and their understanding, despite what their religious affiliation is. And I'm glad that they will continue to have those discussions. And I would like to also read this other little piece here, when asked if chaplains would be limited in their ability to serve soldiers following the Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. Army Chaplain Lieutenant Colonel Carlton Burke said that no changes were necessary to protect the chaplain's rights. We've always been able to preach and teach and anticipate little change in the future. Now, apparently the role of the chaplain has more of a major role than is often discussed or is often realized. But more importantly, what happens when that role or that position is cut off due to that individual's disconnection from the military? Are we, the chaplain, the spiritual community, are they prepared to deal with how war or the military impacts individuals in the civilian world? Is there a necessary training for the non-military spiritual community? These questions we hope to answer during this hour, and we're going to be having our regular guest, Black Hawk, on to address our, help us to answer some of those questions. And I'm going to begin with trying to frame some descriptive narrative on what it has looked like for myself, and I think that our guest co-host will also add some insight on what it has looked like for her in her relationship with the chaplain or spiritual leader, and that was there an impact on what or was not in place when you sought that relationship or to create a relationship with that individual. I will start by saying that when I transitioned back into the civilian world, I did seek spiritual guidance. However, that was a serious lack of understanding or disconnect in my abilities to articulate to them what it is I was discussing. Several local elected officials who are clergy could not process the level of complexity within many layers of facts and statements that I was trying to give them. They were not able to understand and suggested that I needed to focus. I think what has happened is that the lack of training does not permit the traditional spiritual leader who is non-military trained to understand their veterans or military congregants or counselee, if that is the case, for pastoral or spiritual counselors. So we're going to be talking about that today, and I'm going to open up the line to introduce our guest co-host. And good afternoon. How are you today?
Hi, Kathy. How are you today?
Okay. I did try to be as non-distinct about what it is we were going after, but to be able to kind of be
create, if you will, what it needs to look like for us when we transition from the military into our discussion. And then hopefully at the end of our discussion, we would have created a scenario that will bring certain spiritual leaders to some understanding that they need additional training for military and veterans who are transitioning through or in their churches or in their communities where they are providing the role of chaplain or spiritual leader. Would you care to elaborate, please?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, thanks for having me again. And I've been through this same experience over the course of many years. When I first came back from the military from combat, specifically, first of all, we already have a serious issue, which is currently being worked on, about the efficacy of the chaplain corps in the theater of combat and the number of clergy that are employed, you know, by the United States government, by the Department of Veterans Affairs, Department of Defense, that are available to serve the needs of military. Military, active duty military, it's one thing to have a chapel and have services, but when you come back, when you're in a combat environment, they are sorely lacking. When you come back from that environment and attempt to transition back from what you've seen and into civilian environment again, there is a very serious, serious lack of the amount of clergy that are necessary, not so much the military side of the house, but during the transition process for soldiers to reassimilate into their hometowns, their communities. And they are unaware of the nature of the trauma that we've experienced. They're unaware of the reason why we are, so very different from the way we were before we left. And that is why, in my opinion, it's very, very imperative that we, if we're going to ensure that the majority, that's military and civilians, do reconcile from a moral viewpoint, they must be trained. We must make available to them, and they must be available of the information of what we've gone through. Now, in my frustration, you know, I'm a writer because I couldn't just go up there and start cussing people out. We do that in the military, but you don't do that back here in polite society. And so I wrote things, and for a long time, I was really pretty much isolated when I transitioned out because I didn't have clergy that understood. And in my frustration, I couldn't even sit there with them. And that's why I'm grateful that I bumped into, you know, I told you about Reach FM. They did have a radio station and Faith City Family Church down there right near Dover. And I started listening to them on the radio and music, and I started calling them in and whatnot, and that gave me the courage to go ahead and in my small attempt to try to fill in the gaps, because quite a few of them were very concerned about why they didn't know exactly what they needed to do to help us reset our moral compass. And they asked me, and I threw a tantrum about it one time. And this was I called it my civilian response to a soldier's petition. And I wrote this back in January 06. If I may, can I speak of it? Kathy?
Absolutely, please. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. You know, this is the opinion that I got from the civilian clergy back then, and this is the reason why I stopped going and I started listening to music instead for a little while. The attitude was, "Thank God you came home. The war was then. Now you got to fit in with us again. So come on and pray, and we're glad you're back." And the response was so overwhelming, they would fill in the pews, and they would forget the fact that we had been so isolated then, that would overwhelm us. And when you tried to say something to them, it pretty much the attitude was if they just screamed and hollered and prayed long enough, all of a sudden you would snap out of it. When that was not what the problem was. The problem was we could not reconcile what happened. And there was not a way for us to articulate exactly what happened. And so I was mad for a long time. And then I got to, I managed to write this one. Matter of fact, this is a little bit, it's prophetic because I wrote this May 16th, 2010. To my reach, and it said, it's called Filet of Soul. The Christian soldier that you see is not the same as he used to be. He's no longer self-assured like before a war. His soul has been corrupted because of what he saw. The tour of duty ruined faith's purity. Now back home again, he's unable to make anyone understand why the troop is a goof. Doesn't go to church because of hurt. We can't forget the life he survived in the sand. He's still unstable because of blood stuck on his hands. And that's why your GI is scared to even sit in the back pew due to what he's been through. He wants to run out the exit because he feels so corrupted. He can't tell you the truth about the violence, so he keeps his silence. He had to put God away for a while so he could kill the enemy military style. Let's Roll cost him his soul in ways he still cannot reconcile. He feels decrepit for breaking all of those commandments. And that's why the GI in your family ain't the way he used to be. He still can't get through his own holy hell. Can't you tell? That's the reason why he's all tore up. And you should be too, reading what I managed to write down. My words are nothing compared to the sandpit. But it's the best that we can do under government censorship. That said, it's a need, a serious need for civilian clergy and outreach ministry to understand the depths of the things that have happened to us, that we have to have the ability to reconcile within our own communities, our own secular communities, whether they're Seventh-day Adventists, whether they're evangelical, Christian, Jewish, Buddhist, Muslim. We need civilian ministry and clerical organizations to be equipped to assist us in things that they are not used to dealing with on a religious, a faith-based foundation. Because that is the main casualty that any soldier that has been through war never recovers from without that type of input and understanding from their hometown pastors, their hometown religious organization. Because unless you want them to be able to transition out into the civilian world adequately, they cannot and should not be compelled to continue to come back to the VA because they're still cut off from that faith, that family faith organization in their hometown. And that's just my point of view. I'm so grateful I was able to find someone that was able to go ahead and help me with my transition process, and obviously I'm still going through it. But if we don't address this,
let me ask you this question so that we can kind of expound on this area a little bit. What do you think the disadvantage is, or what contrary impact or lack thereof when the non-military or the traditional spiritual counselor leader is not trained or avoids, for whatever reason, the veteran or military-specific issues that are brought to them through their congregation or whatever of their counselors? What do you think some of the disadvantages are even more so, what do you think would have been an occurrence had you not had Reach FM some 14 years ago? And I'm gonna ask you to answer that, and I'm going to like to share about what I think has happened as a lack of spiritual connection with those who are in those positions that you go to for spiritual guidance and to help to develop in your spirituality. I want you to just expound on that just a little bit.
Would you like me to speak in regard to my attempts to find civilian counsel in that regard?
Well, you can, but first, Reach FM being an available resource to you at that time, how would that benefit, and what would be the disadvantage had that not occurred or had that not been there for you?
Well, frankly, when I came back from the military, my initial return from the military, the military chaplains and clergy that were available to me, and we're speaking back during the 1990 through 1995, I'll say, there was nothing really laid in place, even in the military chaplain corps, to address the needs of women veterans in regard to what happened to us, the trauma, because our trauma was a lot different. You know, I'm speaking specifically of what are we talking about here when it comes to us, a specific topic, military rape and things of that nature. There were no chaplains equipped, military, not just civilian, but military, that were equipped or prepared to handle the fact that we were coming home violated in this regard and at the hands of our own fellow soldiers. They didn't want to believe it. And the automatic perception was, well, because, you know, women, you must have enticed them. It was always some type of, it must have been our fault. And so that wall was already laid in place. And then those that did understand what was going on, because God thank you, two chaplains that knew what was going on. But their hands were tied in regard to addressing the issue, in regard to, you know, assisting on that end. And as a result, I came back pretty much gun-shy from the chaplain corps in general, too. And the few chaplains that we did have back when I came back to peacetime that I tried to talk to, it was the same thing. And they also had the undercurrent of, well, we just don't want to make that type of stuff public. I'm not making this public. I'm supposed to be speaking in confidence to clergy. And so that there needs to be addressed in regard to military chaplain corps, the mindset in that regard. Then when I attempted to reach out to civilian, I try to reach out. Yes?
You got into an area that was somewhat specific, and I don't think that anyone knows what you're talking about when you start referring to the chaplain saying, well, we don't want to talk about that. Really, you want to talk about what that is, or we want to stay on the subject of what it is that the chaplain per se is lacking in training on dealing with that and how they particularly address, speaking more generically, of course, but you're talking about a particular issue. Do you want to talk about what that it is?
Okay, what it is, the main problem that the military chaplains have, in my opinion, is that when you attempt to speak to them about something that has happened, and if you're in the military, you're coming back from the military, obviously it's going to be of a military nature. If you're speaking to a chaplain in regards to resetting your moral compass, it's going to be a sensitive nature, courtesy of a military experience, i.e. you are trying to tell them about something that you witnessed or something that you suffered that was wrong while you were working as a soldier, either in combat or during peacetime. And that causes a conflict of interest with them because they can counsel you morally, but then they are put in a predicament of, I have to report to my chain of command if something is told to me by a petitioner that could possibly be a war crime. So their hands are tied. Do they want to listen to it? What are they going to do with the information? Does it affect more people? And then that dag on confidence, that right of privilege, is put at risk. And it causes them to dag nab it, try to figure out, well, what am I supposed to do? Should I be a soldier or should I be a chaplain? A soldier would report it, but a chaplain is supposed to keep it in confidence and help you reconcile morally the crimes that you committed or the crimes that you witnessed. That chaplain is put into a catch-22 situation if they are employed by the government.
Now,
that's
more specifically,
a serious issue.
When if you can kind of transition that thought into the civilian spiritual leader, is there any correlation that you can make between the two in the military and outside of the military?
Okay, in regard to, that's why, in my opinion, and this is my due to my personal experience, I feel that it is more, shall we say, beneficial for the soldiers that are transitioning out to have civilian ministry and counsel, because civilian ministry and counsel is not bound by, oh, my boss, you know, I've got to, my boss is God. I don't have to run over here and break this confidence with this service member, because to me, he is not a service member. To me, he is a child of God. So he can speak freely to me without fear of repercussions, courtesy of something getting back to, quote, his chain of command. In my opinion, we need more civilian clergy and mentors and counselors for faith-based counseling than military faith-based counseling. Because that way you are not afraid of what your company commander going to say or what's going to happen if it gets back to this and that. But by that same token, civilian clergy needs to understand exactly the nature of the things they're going to be told. It's not going to be an issue of, well, I took $5 out of my dad's wallet when he wasn't looking. It's an issue of, I watched these individuals, dag nabbit, you know, did some friendly fire action. They've got to understand the dynamics of what we're trying to reconcile and the hurt that it caused us, because we had no recourse and we had no area of redress in that type of environment out of fear for our own safety. And now we're coming back to what should be safe. And that means that we really, it is imperative that we establish some protocol or plan so that as many civilian clergy and faith-based organizations that are willing to step up to the plate and take this responsibility to bring some of the most wounded soldiers back and help their families heal, to become whole again outside of a military environment, it needs to be addressed. It needs to be very seriously addressed. And that includes changing the climate of the culture regarding the secular communities that they're returning to, because many of them are not accustomed to, they're so used to everybody just being friendly like they used to be. When in reality, you spent anywhere from, I will say, 11 to 14 months isolated and shut down and closed up. You're not going to be as gregarious as you used to be, you know, and comments and things like that, that really makes you hold in more. And that's why, like I said, we need more outreach ministries. Like I said, I started off, I got so sick and tired of trying to sit in someone's closed-in environment, I started listening on the radio and picking up the phone, you know, through outreach. And I still communicate with them today because I would not be here now had it not been for them. And I hope that a lot of other soldiers and their families, if they don't feel comfortable in that secular, that you know, specific environment anymore until they get used to it, do the same. Because it's kind of, it's very isolating to be, because you do what you have to do in a war zone to come back home to protect what you knew was home. And then when you come back home, you don't fit in your home anymore. Because you don't have a place you can go ahead and pray and reconcile.
What's the training, from your perspective, what's missing? What's missing in our traditional pulpit? What's missing in our non-military or civilian future? Where would we start to enlist a training foundation for them? Just the fundamentals of how would a spiritual leader, counselor, preacher, teacher, somebody from our clerical community, where would they start in approaching the veterans community or the veteran or military congregant? Where would they start?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I'll give you a prime example. The demise of Bin Laden. Everybody was running around here talking about, yeah, we killed him. Yep, headshot and all that type of stuff. Yeah, oh, yeah, and now they got these people on television talking about, I heard one guy yesterday, a crime was committed up here in Philadelphia, and they asked a bystander what would they do to the individual. Well, I hope they SEAL Team 6 them. I hope they SEAL Team. That's one of the first things that we need to go ahead and go out of our way and that civilian clergy can address before the soldier even gets home. Because a lot of people fail to realize we are not proud of killing people. That is a means of last resort. So for you to forget that that's breaking one of God's commandments, instead of the culture as a whole, you don't glorify it. That was a guess what? We wish there was another way to do it. So for you to sit there and pat people on the back for having to go ahead and be a sniper, guess what? You are out of your gourd if you glorify the Lord. And that's one of the basic things that we need to go ahead, that I pray to God, and a lot of them are getting back on track about that. Because I keep telling folks over and over again, I said, you know, you think that we are proud of the fact that we have to resort to taking another one of God's children out of here? No. Because it's his job to do that. We pray that they stop doing what they're doing. But if push comes to shove, we have to do it for the greater good. But that does not, you don't glorify that. The person that pulled that trigger, the team that went with him, still has that blood on their hands and on their conscience. And the more that we sensitize, and the more that civilian clergy, I pray, continues to sensitize, because, see, right now they're desensitized to, they brag about, oh, yeah, we got, no, we're not hunting deer. And if you hunt deer, you better be looking for some venison because you're hungry, not because you want a dag on trophy on your wall. See, we need to resensitize. That's what civilian clergy can do in their capacity as well. Resensitize from everybody that thinks that this is a war, is a game, and all them video games. These are lives. You cannot reset it and start over with the same number of people tomorrow. And the more that we can resensitize the United States and the world as a whole, that these things are what eats away at the very heart and soul of the soldiers that go out here and come back, the better they will be able to reassimilate within their communities coming off of that tarmac. Because we are proud that we serve our country to the best of our ability against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and follow the lawful orders of those appointed over us. So help us God. We're proud of serving and protecting our country. But sometimes when we are forced to do things that erode our moral compass, we don't come back here to be applauded for that. And no one should be proud of the fact that, yeah, how many you kill, how many people you... No. And the sooner that we resensitize everyone as a whole, the quicker that soldier who pulled that trigger will reconcile within himself, reconcile to God, and regain his soul.
I think that you hit at the very core of what needs to happen to ensure that our veteran community has that resource. Many of us who, even before our military experience or our military career began, some of us were inherently a part of spirituality, God, in our lives. And when I think about, you know, when I read modern news or modern representation on the religion and spirituality in the military, the different distinctions, Islamic, and now they have an atheist who has taken on the role of a chaplain. Think of that. Now we're talking mm-hmm. about. I'm hearing. Now we want to make a further distinction in black chaplains and Indian chaplains and the same type of dichotomies that exist outside of our military community are being forced, in my opinion, upon us. The military, when I was in my basic training in AIT, those concerns of race and ethnicity was not to me on the surface. And I think when we were training in the foxholes and the various buddy-buddy dependent activities that were required, you kind of learn to look past all of that. But when I read a lot about the military from its perspective as outsiders, even the way our government sometimes breaks it down from race and ethnicity, I think we have to get to draw some lines on what should be military and what should not. In my opinion,
correct.
Even with regard to the donuts, don't tell, retail, that takes such a dominance in our 111th Congress right before the end of the year. And I wonder, if this is a military issue, my position with the military is when I trained and went into the military, aside from my own individual experience, nobody stopped what they were doing to come see about me. I mean, and apparently nobody stopped in the military what they were doing to go see about you. And I can think of a dozen others who had really just incredible situations in the military. Nobody stopped what they were doing. You could not get to your congressman. And in cases where the chaplain was the only person that was in your parameters, you couldn't get to the chaplain or whatever that important person was.
Correct.
So I look now, you know, in hindsight, and learned and formally trained as a pastoral counselor, and what it should look like. And I see that there are too many voices that are getting too much favor because it's not inclusive. And what is not inclusive to me is disproportionately a favorite to those who can get or garner support once they get their voices heard. So we need an inclusive discussion or have representation to have an inclusive voice. Because what I hear from you, I hear from so many other women who are seeking answers and available resources. When I look at what's on the news and I look at what basically what dominates our blogs and whatever, and it's all about the various ethnicities. Now I'm listening to this lesbian LGBT program today, or what's on the set format today with Agnew Bhagwati, who is the founder and executive director of One, the Seventh Women's Action Network, who was founded just a couple of years ago. They're also the ones who spearheaded the class action lawsuit that verdict 15 when it was filed, with the 17 or whatever number of the people were involved. So the topic of her discussion today, she's having an event today, 1 o'clock, in New York, with some veteran staff and professionals. But the issue is women and the LGBT community. Now, I'm not exactly sure what distinction it is from the LGBT community and the reference that they would actually align themselves with women, because I'm not exactly sure what the classification, the identification, or the gender identification is for LGBT as it relates to the military. So the VA has now given them this time, 1 o'clock today, they're going to be having this program or this panel discussion. So
okay.
If the legislation has not yet, or how that identifies with me, is women and LGBT.
Okay. Excuse me,
so
Kathy?
I would need a definition of what is the distinction that women and LGBT have to gain a form where there's a separate identity in that title. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Well, Kathy, excuse me if I may interject, please. And this is me personally. I'm going to have to close now because, seriously, I feel that if our topic of discussion today is regarding clergy and chaplaincy in the ranks, little things like that are completely detracting from the main topic of discussion. And that's why
okay.
I do not entertain those opinions in that regard, because my opinions in regard to gays and lesbians in the military are my personal opinions, and they will not, and I shall not permit them to pollute, corrupt, or detract from our main concern, which is chaplains in the military, the need for more ministry outside the military that understand the needs of military individuals. I am not going to corrupt that noble discussion today regarding someone's sexual preferences, because that has nothing to do with
okay,
resetting a moral compass of someone that comes back from war, in my opinion. It has
okay,
nothing to do with it.
Okay, we're going to move on because there's just a couple minutes left in the program. We have 5 minutes
Thank
left.
You.
And what we're going to do is
Thank you.
We're going to end our program with the understanding that there needs to be training into the chaplaincy position that can further engage the veterans community with some realistic expectations that there's a sincere desire to address, to assist, to counsel them in their lives and their families. I think that there
Correct.
Will be military families also who are being affected. And if the individual military, the individual person who has enlisted or has had activity within the military is being absent of that relationship, then they are being affected as whatever role, think of parent, wife, mother, husband, daughter, son,
mm-hmm.
in
mm-hmm.
their families. So we will continue the dialogue, and I think it was a wonderful program just to set the basis for what I believe will be a need to establish training of the fundamental basics of spiritual development, relationship and communication to the veteran congregant. And
mm-hmm.
I think for the next program, we have created the backdrop for what I am going to do within the Koinonian jurisdiction of the Church of God in Christ, of which I am a member, is to seek that our overseer can have a sensitivity towards the veteran congregant, the military congregant or churchgoer who may find themselves in need of counseling under this jurisdiction. I have assumed the role in spearheading this based on your kind of igniting the topic and bringing it to my attention, even having experienced it personally myself, that there is a need for training. I actually spoke to the my church's school director, which I understand there's a transition going on in place there. But I'm going to, as soon as possible, get this letter to my pastor, who is a prelate, meaning that he is a jurisdictional pastor of the Church of God in Christ Comfort, which is about
mm-hmm.
8 million individuals. And I can
mm-hmm.
only imagine what percentage of those are veterans and military people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worthwhile for us to take a very serious approach in seeking some real remedy to our spiritual healing or spiritual
mm-hmm.
Transition.
Yes.
And what needs to happen, because it is important for me, and I can think of many other women who are veterans in my church, and we will continue to have this dialogue and to bring that on, only because I believe that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Heal may have some residual effects on that role. And I wanted to kind of tie that in. We have further discussion at that appropriate time, but I did want to get that in because of what was happening today. So everything
yeah.
that I'm saying is not necessarily to expound on, but to just kind of, this is where we are with this. Because
mm-hmm.
at some point, we have to deal with all the realities of what does the military and the war have on us as individuals and ultimately who we are. So how we want to identify ourselves is going to be relevant to us as chaplains and how we are going to counsel or make suggestions or advise or listen to those individuals who have those issues. So it is important for an inclusion, because we cannot dismiss anyone despite the fact we may not agree, but we will provide the biblical and the most fundamental spiritual guidance based on our understanding what that training has been put together. So I want to thank everybody for joining our program. It has come to the close. We would like to thank Black Hawk, but she is becoming known as our most insightful guest. Join us next week, Monday, from 12 to 1. visit us on our website for our archived edition, www.nawz.philly.com, Facebook and Twitter at Philly Bet. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week. Please have a pleasant, pleasant